Let me ask first whether the people who are on the WebEx call can see the document called Guide for Spec Leads and Licensing. Is that showing up for those of you on
Yeah,
the WebEx call?
it's showing up, Harold. Yep.
Okay. Jonathan, would you care to begin?
Sure. Okay. Let me make the necessary disclaimer first that I'm an attorney for Sun. And so what we're doing and I'm doing here is trying to speak to questions that have arisen, or the questions were formed out of some back and forth that I had with Heather Van Curen and with Harold. So these are meant to be helpful observations, but they're not legal advice. I'm not able to give legal advice to representatives of other companies, so this discussion may provoke questions, or other things may provoke questions. And if you have legal concerns, although we're happy to try and address them, I need to advise you to seek the counsel of your company's own representatives. This is the focus here started out as what are the trying to explain the provisions of the JSPA, the Java Specification Participation Agreement, as they apply to the spec lead company's responsibilities for licensing the RI and the DCK. I did include some material at the end discussing the licensing of the specification itself. The provisions dealing with the RI and the TCK are, in general, one could say, looser or give considerably more discretion to the specification lead about the form of the agreement, business decisions to be made, and so forth. So just because of the sequence in which the questions were formed, I'll just go through the top. From the top and focus on the RI and the TCK, and then circle around to the spec lead. If I'd be happy to take questions as they arise, no need to wait. So just if something comes up that you want to ask about, please feel free to. So the first question we posed is, do the licenses for the RI and the TCK have to be different agreements? The formal answer is that there's a requirement in the JSPA that the TCK be made available separately on a standalone basis. It's theoretically possible that the spec lead could license the RI only with the TCK. In other words, there's not a parallel requirement that the RI be made available separately too. But as a practical matter, because the requirement that the TCK be offered on a standalone basis, the practice, certainly everything that I've seen, has been to offer the two, to offer the RI standalone as well. And that comes from Section 5F1 of the JSPA. Second question. I sort of cover these two together. Does the RI have to be made available without requiring licensing of the TCK? I suppose, again, technically you could require a bundle there, but since the TCK is available separately, nobody would be required to take the RI license. Basic principle for licensing the RI, and there's a bit of editorial discretion here in saying the basic principle. But in Section 5F1, the spec lead is obligated to offer to license the RI to interested parties on non-discriminatory, fair, and reasonable terms. Once that threshold is met, and subject to some additional requirements that come later in Section 5F, the spec lead really has considerable discretion to choose both in the interpretation of those terms and how to put them into practice. So one example of this is, can the RI license require fees? And the answer is yes. Some reference implementations are licensed for a fee, some not, and where there is a fee, there have been different structures. And again, so long as this threshold of non-discriminatory, fair, and reasonable is met, it's up to the spec lead to establish those terms. And the I touch in the answer there that the disclosure of the business terms, which is driven by the JCP process document rather than the JSPA itself, is made at each of the significant phases, that is, at early draft review and then subsequent phases up through final review ballot, with an obligation to inform the PMO so that it can inform the CEs if the business terms change over the course of the through the process. Can the spec lead include compatibility restrictions in the license for the RI? The answer is yes. That's allowed. It's not required, but it's allowed. But there's an upper limit on the compatibility restrictions that the spec lead could choose to have accompanying the RI. The language here is quotes pretty much directly from the JSPA. The spec lead must allow the user to copy, modify source code portions, if any, it provided, and distribute the RI in whole or in part as part of a complete binary implementation of the spec that satisfies the core compatibility requirements, which are listed. Those are the same core compatibility requirements that show up earlier in the JSPA that are associated with the spec license, which I'll talk to a little bit later. But it's the same wording, and there are several places in the JSPA where there's a reference back to that formulation. Fully implement, don't modify, superset, or otherwise alter in the protected namespace and pass the TCK. The last paragraph under this question is significant. Spec lead cannot impose more rigorous compatibility requirements, either as a condition of the scope of the license or as a contractual commitment, than satisfying the requirements above. So, summary, there's not an obligation on the spec lead when licensing the RI to include compatibility requirements for products that would be derived from the RI. The spec lead is allowed to do that, but there's an upper bound or an upper limit on what conditions the spec lead can include. Can the RI be licensed under an open source license? The answer is yes. The spec lead could, probably the most relevant example, could allow the RI to be distributed under an open source license that would allow the subsequent modification of the derived work, even if it ends in a non-compliant product. Whether to do so or not is really the choice of the spec lead. Now I'm going to twist a little bit into the patent area, which has some twists and turns. Must the spec lead license the RI under its essential patent claim? The answer is yes. The spec leads cannot license the RI and under, for example, its copyright interest and refuse any sort of to offer any sort of patent license. The distinction here between essential and non-essential, and I assume most of you have run into this in other contexts, is a notion of whether there is a technically feasible non-infringing alternative in the course of implementing the spec. So if there's a patent that's so fundamental that there's not a way to do that, we would characterize it as essential. Sometimes you see the term necessary or blocking. And it is the spec lead's obligation to include its own essential patent claims to license under them when licensing the RI. It doesn't, important to point out, it doesn't mean that the license must be free, because, again, bear in mind that the overall requirement is that the terms be non-discriminatory, fair, and reasonable. And within that notion, the agreement is explicit that the patent license can be conditioned on reciprocity, requiring the licensee be willing to grant its own non-discriminatory, fair, and reasonable license for its essential patent claims reading on the spec. There's a fair amount in that paragraph, but I'm trying to capture the essence. Maybe I should pause there and see whether there are any questions yet. Okay. Must the spec lead license the reference implementation in source code form? This is a bit of an awkward one. The JSPA is agnostic on the question. It's expressly so. It defers to the process document. And I would say that practice over the last several years has been that although the process document can be read to encourage providing the RI in source code form, it hasn't been universally understood to require that. So you see different practices. Can the spec lead license the spec along with the reference implementation? The answer is yes, but there's a provision in the JSPA, Section 5F6, which says that if the spec lead does so, it must be on terms consistent with how the spec lead would license the spec for independent implementations, meaning the core compatibility requirements that I alluded to a few minutes ago. So that's a rough set of questions on licensing the reference implementation. Let me turn now to the TCK. Many of these provisions parallel those that apply to the RI, but there are a few relevant differences. First, in parallel, is that the obligation is, again, to make the TCK available on non-discriminatory, fair, and reasonable terms. Once that threshold is met, the nature of those terms are subject to the spec lead and its reasonable discretion. With an important exception, the TCK can be licensed for fees. The fees would need to, along with other key business terms, would need to be disclosed to the EC at early draft review and then at subsequent phases. The exception here is for two categories, qualified not-for-profit entities and qualified individuals. And I've included the definitions of them taken verbatim from the JSPA in the next question. But there's an express requirement that the TCK be offered to those groups at no cost. Let me add a follow-on comment there. Because the TCK needs to be offered on a standalone basis for anybody, for commercial entities as well, if a not-for-profit entity were to take a license and then cease to behave within the parameters of a not-for-profit, were to change its charter or do something less formally drastic, but in the eyes of the TCK licensor, be engaging as a for-profit entity, then the consequence would not necessarily be the loss of the TCK license. It would just mean the licensor could seek to treat the licensee as a commercial entity. Now, how each spec lead / licensor would analyze that situation might differ. But I did want to make the basic point that because the TCK is available to all, just to two different categories of business terms, in fact, that falling out of one of the categories wouldn't by itself make you unable to obtain the license. And then, as I indicated, the definitions that are lifted from the JSTA follow below. It's not addressed specifically in the JSPA, but situation frequently comes up where trying to sort out the line between qualified not-for-profits and qualified individuals comes up. In other words, if you have an open source project, who's covered by which? I think a common practice has been that, let me put it this way, there are limits on who an open source project can effectively speak for and bind from a legal standpoint, depending on how the open source group is organized. I know from Sun's experience, I'm not sure if others are doing this the same way, that where there are individuals who might be cooperating, say, in work on an implementation or on the TCK, under the auspice under the umbrella of an open source project, but the open source project wouldn't have the authority to speak for or commit them. They might be signed on as qualified individuals to assure that they were getting access to the TCKs for free. One other editorial aside, and this is specific to Sun. I can't speak for how other companies would do this when they're the spec lead. There tends to be some confusion about Sun's scholarship program. The scholarship program is actually it determines sort of the readiness of the project to when are you ready to get access to TCK. But it's really about getting access to support from Sun for free. The TCK, the provision about that the TCK needs to be available at no cost to not-for-profit entities and individuals doesn't require those directly to provide support. And when this was all launched 6 years or so ago, Sun announced a program which is often referred to as the scholarship program. There's a three-member board which includes non-Sun members, and that's really a vehicle for providing no-charge support akin to what a commercial entity could get if you paid for it. Can the spec lead impose compatibility restrictions as part of the license for the TCK? The answer here is really the same as with the RI license. Yes, but there's an upper boundary that the spec lead cannot impose more rigorous compatibility requirements under the TCK license than satisfying the requirements of the user guide or the core compatibility requirements, pointing back to the same section 5F4. Must the spec lead license the TCK in source code form? Here, the formal answer is the same as the one I gave earlier with reference to the RI. The JSPA is agnostic. Process document encourages, but hasn't been at least universally understood to require licensing the TCK in source code form. I think most of you on the call bring your own experiences to this, that the nature of the TCK has been that the source code is not only useful to licensees, but it's also likely to spare the spec lead resources in responding to questions that otherwise would come up, helping the company seeking to test implementations to understand the structure of the test a little bit better. So I think it's certainly been the case. More often than not, there's been a push towards making the source code available as part of the license. I'm not familiar enough with everything that's gone through the process to say whether that's been the universal treatment. Okay, so that's the those are the sort of hypothetical questions we drew up around the source code licensing. Let me pause for a moment, see if there are any questions before turning to the spec license. Okay. These provisions are found in Section 5A, which is fairly short, and then 5B. Once the JSR has passed the final approval ballot, it's to be published by the PMO on the JCB website and to be made available for license at no charge from the license coming from the spec lead. The license is bifurcated in that it's made under both the spec lead's copyrights and under their patents. The copyright portion is relatively simple. The patents get a little bit more complicated. There are some permutations in that that I'll try and walk through in a moment. But in essence, the grant that's to be offered by the spec lead is to authorize the creation and distribution of independent implementations. Independent implementation is a defined term that in a nutshell means that it doesn't incorporate any code from the reference implementation made available by the spec lead. Now, there are some caveats to that. One, there is the possibility of so-called shared code, which was a relevant category in earlier Java days, the earlier platform distributions made available by Sun. At this point, shared code is largely a non-factor. There's the theoretical possibility that an expert group could make the decision that shared code is needed. Shared code meaning code that anybody would need to include in an implementation to be able to satisfy the compatibility requirements. But the threshold or the trigger for being able to do that is a fairly steep one, and I'm not aware that anybody's tried to invoke that. And then there's the possibility that the spec lead might have licensed other pieces of code out there. The example would be, for example, under an open source project where the license for that project would permit the reuse in some other form. So maybe the shorthand way here is an independent implementation is code that doesn't borrow from the RI unless there's explicit permission from the spec lead to do so. Now, the one more point here, and this has been an object of some discussion between Sun and a handful of companies represented on this call. There's a bit of an awkwardness between the language of 5B concerning compatibility requirements, which commits the spec lead to include those same three core compatibility requirements that I referred to earlier as a condition of authorizing the licensee to create independent implementations. At the same time, the credibility of that is, if you're an implementer considering, well, my implementation isn't compatible, do I have the necessary IP licenses from the spec lead? That's actually not so much a cut and dry decision. It depends on how you perceive both the motivation of the spec lead and the strength of their intellectual property rights. And because the JSPA is an agreement between Sun and each of the other JCP participants, but it's a bilateral agreement. So, in other words, there are several hundred JSPAs that all have the same terms, but there's not one multi-party agreement among everybody within the community. In the situation where another JCP member would be functioning as the specification lead, Sun recognizes that the whether the other company as the spec lead, how motivated it would be to enforce its IP rights against incompatible independent implementations is really up to the spec lead, that it's Sun's not in a position to force that issue, and nor are other companies within the community. So we, in a handful of instances, we've made a sort of provided a statement, which I've included here, which is in effect to say that to give assurance that Sun would not view as a violation of the spec lead company's obligations to Sun under the JSPA, an expression by the company towards its licensees under the spec license, that it on how it will or will not exercise its own intellectual property rights with respect to independent implementations. So that statement is included there. Again, I know for a couple companies on the call, it's occasionally been a point of discussion with Sun, so I wanted to call special attention to that. Can the spec license require fees? No. It's pretty clear in Section 5B that it's a no-charge license, and that's been true since the beginning. Does the spec license have to provide for commercial implementations? Once the spec clears final approval ballot, which is when the provisions dealing with the spec license kick in, the answer is yes. It's yes in effect by silence. It's to allow for the creation and distribution of independent implementations. There's nothing in the definition of independent implementations that suggesting that they could be restricted only to non-commercial use. Okay, patent licenses. Let me provide some terminology here. There's one concept that's important for following this was already introduced, which is the distinction between an essential or necessary patent and one that might be relevant to a particular implementation, but for which there is a technically, at least, there's a feasible workaround so as not to infringe the patent. The other distinction to keep in mind is whether the patent is held by the spec lead or whether it is licensed into the spec lead by other members of the expert group. Now, the circumstances where an expert group member would license a patent to the spec lead, this isn't... it's not an identifiable transaction. It depends on the contributions that the expert group member makes to the work of the group. If the contribution, which usually is to the specification, conceivably it could be to the RI or TCK, although under those circumstances companies often use supplemental agreements to make the IP flow more clear. But if the contribution made by an expert group member, if the member all company also owns a patent, and the patent would read on that contribution when and if the contribution is included in the specification. In other words, you make a suggestion to what the spec should require. The spec lead and the expert group take you up on the suggestion, and then it's only possible to implement your suggestion by infringing a patent that your company holds. The intention is that those a license under that patent be granted at no charge to the spec lead, who can then flow it through to its sort of downstream licensees of the spec. Now, in that circumstance, the spec lead has to flow it through, but there is a provision in the JSPA sort of dealing with reciprocity that what I would characterize as a beneficiary, somebody who is developing an independent implementation, if they also hold essential patents reading against implementations of the spec, no feasible workaround. And if they bring a claim under those essential patents against the contributing expert group member, the one that has granted a license under its patent, the contributing expert group member is sort of free to defend itself and is sort of off the hook at that point, the license to the downstream licensee, not to everybody, but to the downstream licensee terminates. So the rough metaphor here is kind of either no first strike or reserving defensive rights. That's a specific provision that deals with patent rights flowing through from expert group members through the spec lead downstream to independent implementers. It's slightly different for essential patents that are owned by the spec lead. The spec lead can condition the license, the right to use its essential patents, again, reading on the same specification, to the downstream licensee's use, but it's not a symmetrical exchange. The spec lead has to license its under its essential patents for doing independent implementations at no cost, and the reciprocity is simply that the downstream party seeking to exercise its patent rights do so on non-discriminatory, fair, and reasonable terms. So there is an oddity or an asymmetry there in how the spec lead's own patents are treated compared to patents that would flow in from other expert group member companies. There's nothing in the JSPA that requires either expert group members or the spec lead to grant licenses concerning non-essential patents. As a practical matter, what that means is that since the transfer of IP from expert group members to the spec lead, in essence, really happens only in retrospect. I mean, the contribution, presumably there's something tangible there, or there may be, but whether there's an IP right attaching to it probably wouldn't get analyzed closely unless there's a dispute about it later on. But for the spec lead, the spec lead can choose, and some do, to grant licenses under a broader set of their patent rights than just their essential patent rights, and they can do that, and they can condition that on reciprocity. So the clearest example would be giving permission for the creation and distribution of independent implementations under any patents that are owned by the spec lead, by the spec lead company, but conditioned on the non-instigation of patent claims by its licensees, by the beneficiaries of that patent promise. So you see that pattern of behavior. You also, there are instances, I think, where the spec lead would limit the license offered under its patent portfolio to essential patents. We've seen both patterns, and the lawyers on the call, the handful, I'm sure, can imagine a variety of permutations in between. There's only one other provision that I wanted to cover formally, and this is the dealing with downstream licensees, or so-called pass-through, and it's particularly relevant to where the independent implementer is an open-source project. The spec lead can require under the spec licenses, as discussed earlier, that its direct licensees only distribute to benefit from the IP promises from the spec lead compatible implementations. But it's recognized that open source licenses in general, one of their defining characteristics is that they allow the modification of the code licensed, including in ways that I suppose could make it no longer a compatible implementation. So when this provision was, which is Section 5E. When this was negotiated many years ago, the feeling, the majority feeling was that it's open source projects have made a commitment to a particular form of license through their own extensive and often a highly political process, that it's not realistic to think that a change in that could be forced on them from the outside. And also the point that it's not feasible to expect that an open source project would be would enforce rights it has. In other words, as a licensor, how aggressive would it be in trying to get downstream licensees to maintain compatibility? I'm providing context that may have seemed more relevant 5 or 6 years ago. So the point is that there's no flow-through obligation in the license for the license used by the independent implementer, so long as what it makes available is satisfies the requirements of the spec license, what its license can permit the downstream parties to do something different, with the caveat that IP rights that flow from the spec lead and conceivably from other expert group members to compatible implementations don't flow through to independent, to not compatible downstream implementations. So a spec lead still would be in a position to presumably to hold out the possibility of asserting whatever IP rights it has against downstream implementations that are not compatible. Okay, I think that completes in a hurried way the questions that we put together in advance. Are there any other questions either that weren't addressed or about these that I haven't addressed, or where people would have further thoughts?
May I point out that someone is having a conversation on the side? I ask you to mute your phone. We're hearing a chatter in the background. Thanks.
Well, so let me circle back to the disclaimer that I gave at the beginning. We lawyers have to do this. The intention here was, I think the PMO felt that there were questions came up frequently enough from a practical standpoint from spec leads that they thought trying to consolidate this information, at least against the questions that they heard most frequently, might make the process easier. So this is offered, I wouldn't even say as guidance, but as suggestions and sort of how Sun perceives the agreement. It's meant to be a helpful tool. Again, it's not meant to bind or commit any other companies to a particular interpretation, especially should they disagree with it. It's not meant as a legal instrument. It's meant as a practical tool that we hope might be helpful on occasion. And this is not a limited opportunity, you know, with the chance to look through this if there are questions that come up either in reading this or in the future, just acting as a spec lead for a particular JSR, the PMO remain available to help, and I'd be happy to do so as well.
Thank you, Jonathan. Don Deutsch from Oracle. Where and how will this document be made available for referenced by spec leagues in the future?
I think we just wanted to see whether we'd hit the mark enough, but I think it would be included in the Harold can probably answer better, but the sort of set of materials available sort of alongside the spec lead guide. I don't think it's meant to have quite that degree of formality, but I did construct it with the idea that it would be available to the spec leads and useful as a resource. So, Harold, any?
Well, it would certainly be linked from the multimedia page where the recording is going to be. So, from there, and probably linked from the spec lead guide as well.
Emmanuel Bernard, JBoss. More generally speaking, does CERN offer some kind of various examples of compliant licenses, following, let's say, various scenarios? Let's say, I want to make available my ARI as an open source license. Here is, a compliant way to do that, et cetera, et cetera. Do you guys offer some kind of, compliant paperwork?
Well, we do. I mean, there's a set of templates that the PMO makes available, a spec license, which is quite specific, although we've seen many variations on it. And then sample RI and TCK licenses. Now, the latter, they tend to model what Sun's practice has been, and there's nothing mandatory in that. I don't want to sort of volunteer them for more work, but I think we could, in fact, the variety of licenses that could be offered is fairly wide, but we could, if you think there's value in it, we could probably try and pull together a set of a handful of core provisions that would satisfy the minimal set of requirements and would be used in any circumstances. For example, the provisions about two examples, the differing reciprocity conditions in offering patent licenses, and the provisions around downstream licensing that I was speaking of in terms of the spec license, but they actually apply in terms of the TCK as well. Those are nuanced enough that there might be some value in simply having access to how somebody else has done it before. So we can take a look at the materials that we have and see whether they could be expanded a little bit, I guess.
I see a benefit in providing some kind of convergence and, make the whole licensing from a licensing point of view, I guess, easier. But I guess it's a long path to get some kind of convergence around those kind of areas. But
yeah, well, it's not something that we could force because of the nature of the rules, but at least for convenience, again, we have some offerings available now, but it sounds as if it might be a good opportunity to take a look at that and see whether we could broaden the selections a bit.
If you haven't seen those are linked from the Spec Lead Guide. There's a link from that page called the License Reference page, and it has a number of sample licenses. I'm going to stop the recording now. We are getting close to the end of our scheduled time for this call, but if people want to continue, spec leads want to stay on the call, or others to discuss, I'm available to stay on the call. I can't speak for anyone else. but the call can continue if people are interested.